The Legends Radio Network now presents Lyrics and Legends with your host, Gary Webb.
Hey, the program's Lyrics and Legends in the studio with me, my co-host and also host of Uncle Buck Plays the Blues, Buck Weatherby. Hey, thanks for coming in, Buck.
I am glad to be here wearing both of my hats, my cowboy hat and my blues hat.
Man, we got a good one lined up. You stumbled on one that I think our listeners, if they've been around at all, are going to know and love.
Oh, man.
The bunch we got coming up tonight on Lyrics and Legends.
Yeah, we're playing a bunch of Kentucky Headhunter songs, as a matter of fact. Oh, I let the cat out of the bag.
I think you let the cat out of the bag. On the phone with us from somewhere in beautiful Kentucky, Richard Young from the Kentucky Headhunters. Hello, Richard. Thanks for taking time to visit with us.
Hello, folks. Actually, I'm sitting down on Beaver Creek near Slick Rock in Edmond, Kentucky. Sitting out in front of my mom and daddy's house down here on the farm. We were raised on a cattle, bean, and tobacco farm, and about 700 acres, been in our family for 200 years. And we lost our parents a couple, 3 years ago over a period of time. And this is still our landing strip, and our old music house is just inside of here up the road a little bit, you know, on the farm. So this is a very special place to do interviews for me.
So you're speaking to us from where it all began, correct?
Oh, it's where it's all began, where it still goes on.
Now, hey, so we'll kind of get our listeners up to speed. I know everybody listening to our station's familiar with the Kentucky Headhunters, but they may not know all the relationships and all the people that are in the band. Tell us who all, who all's in it now with you.
Well, let me back up a little bit and tell you all a story.
All right. That's all what right. We like.
In 1968, my brother Fred on the drums, the ones with the long chin whiskers or sideburns.
It looked kind of like hippie.
You know what you say. But anyway, hey, so he's actually a farmer and a great drummer, but we never quite fit in with the hippies. We just were rural aficionados, I'll say. But anyway, we Fred's on the drums, Greg Martin, our cousin on guitar, myself, and another first cousin, Anthony Kenny, started out in 1968, and we were called Itchy Brothers. And we played all of our lives together. And in 1968, my grandma, Effie Young, bought an extra 100 acres to add on to our farms. And they had an old quaint farmhouse, old clapboard farmhouse. And, people, it's right down on Beaver Creek down here where the creek starts. A lot of people know where Barron River Reservoir is up there. They catch a lot of bass fish.
Oh, yeah.
In Barron County, next door here. And but it comes out of a cave here on the farm. But anyway, this old house, people wanted to rent it to my grandmother, and she didn't want to fool renting it to people and keeping it up like that. And so she'd got the good idea of letting her two grandsons and their two cousins take over this house. And at the time we took over this house, Fred and Anthony were 11 years old, and I was 13, Greg was 14. So we had our y'all seen the Young Rascals. We had our own E-Man Woman Haters Club. You know, of course it didn't stay that way long when we was playing music. We had plenty of gals dropping by, even when they was teenagers. Their parents were driving down there. But we got pretty good pretty quick. So when we got out of high school, Capricorn Records out of Macon, Georgia had been hearing about us, and we'd already been opening for a lot of their acts they had signed. And, you know, when we was little, Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is about 45 minutes from here, where Western Kentucky University is, was a hotbed for Southern Rock, and that's what we were and still are. And, our parents would drive us down there, and there was a bar called the Yellow Hydrant, and we'd open for Charlie Daniels and Outlaws, but we'd have to play, and then we'd have to go outside and peer in the door because we was, you know, 11 through 15, 14, you know. We wasn't old enough to be in a bar, really, but we could keep up. Our parents let us stay and watch the other bands, but me and Charlie Daniels laughed about that a million times. And he said that's the only band I ever saw where a bunch of youngins could come in and keep up with the headliner. But we got pretty good. But anyway, Capricorn took us down to Georgia when we got out of high school. all for Southern Rock. And eventually, we were down there in the 70s, and then the label was kind of waning for a while there. And then when Ronnie Van Zant and Leonard Skinner's boys crashed in October of 77, we came home. And because we all were smart enough to know it, kind of they were holding the torch for Southern Rock at the time. And really, there wasn't any other label supporting it as much. So we were smart enough to know. So we came home, licked our wounds, and then we ran into Led Zeppelin's people. And the Led Zeppelin band had their own record label called Swan Song Records. And they fell in love with our little Itchy Brother group and were grooming us to be the first band on Swan Song Records, because it was an English label. And of course, John Bonham, the great drummer, passed away, and that dissolved that opportunity. And to be honest with you, boys, we just couldn't get a break. Every time we'd have a great opportunity, and I mean, I guess that's why we've learned so much. You know, we've learned what rocks to step on in the creek and what not to. And of course, I've been able to teach my son's band. They moved in the practice house 20 years ago and are very, very successful. I'm proud of them. They just played the sold out Royal Albert Hall in London.
Wow. What's your son's band's name?
They're called Blackstone Cherry. They're very popular down in y'all's way.
Now, does he go by Fred too, or does he go?
No, John Fred.
John Fred. Okay.
That's our two.
He doesn't have them big pork chop sideburns, does he?
No, he doesn't have
no
that,
whiskers.
But he's got good looking hair. You know, I used to have good looking hair. Mine's starting to thin out. I swear, I've had gray hair since I was about 14, and I guess it's just part of growing older. It's getting thin. But Fred lost his early. You know, my brother, he had asthma when he was little, and I think it had a lot to do with it.
You don't think it had anything to do with that coonskin cap he wore all the time while he was?
No, boy, it stinks sometimes if he wears it too long, though. But he'll go through one about every 3 years, and then we'll snatch it up and throw it out the bus window because it doesn't smell right. But anyway, we did that. We did all that, and then in 1986, we were going to take another stab at the Itchy Brother thing, and Anthony, our cousin, had just gotten married. We were still playing bars on weekends and stuff, and Anthony had just gotten married, the cousin that played the bass then, and had gotten a steady job during the week, but we were playing on the weekends, and we told him we was going to take another stab, and he said, I don't think I can take another butt whipping, boy. He said, I'm going to stick where I'm at. So Greg had been filling in with, to make some extra money. Greg had been filling in with Ronnie McDowell, the country rockabilly singer. And then he met Doug Phelps through that. But Fred was playing with Sylvia, the country pop star, you know.
You bet, yeah.
And I wasn't good enough to play with anybody, so I wrote songs for Acre Flows, but down in Nashville, the old publishing company.
Yeah, we're familiar with those guys.
Well, that was a great education, boys, because I don't know why, but Wesley Rose, that owned the company, kind of took me under his wing. Of course, Roy Acuff owned half of it, but he kind of took me under his wing, and I was about as useless as a tomcat with tits down there writing songs, because they had Whitey Schaefer and, you know, all these big writers and that sort of thing. But I sure learned a lot. But I guess a funny story I'll tell you about Roy Acuff. I'd never met him through all my days of hanging out there. And one day this little skinny bow-legged man came down the hallway, and he had on one of them kind of silk satin-looking blue jackets like the Oak Ridge boys wore back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw me. I met him in the hall, and he said, "Hey, boy, who are you?" And I said, "Well, my name's Richard Young, Mr. Acuff. It's a pleasure to meet you." And he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm trying to write some songs." And he said, "Well, if you're going to work here, you're going to have to get a haircut," and just walked on. That's my first meeting with Roy Acuff.
Get a haircut. Get a real job.
Get a haircut and go work here. So, but anyway, the best lesson I ever learned out of that is through all this stuff we were doing, different things to make money and playing on the weekends, is there was a guy named Whitey Schaefer. He's from down y'all's way.
Right, yeah.
And he's written a lot of great songs for a lot of a lot of great singers. And one day we was in the, I was in a writing room, and he was in one across from me. And he knocked on the door and said, "Come over here a minute, Killer. I want to talk to you. I want to play you a song I just wrote." Well, I sat down on the piano stool by him, and he played me this song called "Do You Ever Think of Me?" And I said, "Boy, that's beautiful, Whitey. That is really a great song." And I said, "Will I ever be able to write one like that?" And he said, "Well, hell no." And I just crushed me. And I said, "Well, why, Whitey?" And he said, "Because you'll never be married five times." He said, "Get back up out of that woodshed house you've got and write what you know about." And it was the best lesson that I ever got in my life about music. After that, we had Dumas Walker about 3 months after that.
There we go. That's where I'm going, right there. I know our listeners are dying to hear some Kentucky Headhunters music, and I can't think of a more fitting song than Dumas Walker.
Yeah, let's kick off with that.
We're going to do Dumas Walker here, Richard, and then we'll be back in just a minute. How's that sound?
That sounds good to me. I've run out of breath.
All right. We'll be back with more Lyrics and Legends right after this. Weatherby in the studio with me, and
oh, what a pleasure to be here tonight talking with Richard Young of the Kentucky Headhunters.
I thought it was the Itchy Brothers.
I think we're fixing to get over into Kentucky Headhunters.
Okay, we'll pick up on the story and find out when it went from the Itchy Brothers to the Kentucky Headhunters. Welcome back, Richard. Thanks for taking time to visit with us.
Hey, we're up now on year 21, and we're starting from the Itchy Brothers to head into the Headhunters.
Okay.
1986 is when the Headhunters banded up, and it's basically the Itchy Brother group kind of morphed into the Kentucky Headhunters with a couple of extra members, Doug Fee. Derby, and we were very fortunate to have two because Itchy Brother was top notch, and all we did is just morphed over into the Headhunters. And the Phelps boys had never sung together. They grew up differently. Well, Doug stayed at home, and Doug's brother was kind of a vagabond. He liked to get out and travel when he was about 16, so he was all over the country doing this and that. So when they had never sung together, even in church. And so the first time that they ever sang together was in the practice house. And I gotta admit, boys, that's why I was telling you, God gives every boy, a bunch of boys, one good lick there with music. And he gave us two, because when we broke in with our rock music with their voices together, and the room went neon, it really did. And Fred Doug and I kind of looked at each other and went, hey, we might be able to make something out of this. So we were very fortunate to have two great bands in our lives, and we've, to say the least, we've lived a charmed life. And you know, we started out with Headhunters, and we really weren't too crazy about doing a record deal or anything. I guess we might have been one of the first bands to ever take a shot at being independent on their own. So we actually created our own little album called Picking Up Nashville, and it was recorded in 3 days down at the sound shop with Mike Bradley on the engineer. And we got copies of that made, cassettes back in that day. Didn't have the CDs. And we started our own radio show, a live radio show, just like they used to do back in the day, and it was called The Chipman Show. We had a great friend, Joey Berry, and his dad, Jim, was a very, very smart guy and would let Joey just kind of run the helm. But it played everything from Hank Williams to Led Zeppelin on this station. And it set right on the I-65 interstate. It was only 5,000 watts. But when we would go on Tuesday nights live as the Headhunters and have a special guest, people driving down the interstate would be dialing through the radio, and all of a sudden, here's this bunch of knuckleheads playing live on the radio, which was unheard of since the old days.
Yeah, they don't let us do live stuff here, Jim.
Yeah.
Jim always keeps his finger on the button, so I know what you're talking about.
But it's become, we became very popular. I tell you, one night we were playing, and it got to where we was having a big crowd over there, and it turned into a party. There'd be 20, 30 people show up over there at the radio station, and they'd bring some beer and whatnot, and we'd just, turn on, and we got to having some pretty popular special guests, and word got down to Nashville about this band called Kentucky Headhunters doing a live radio show. And of course, over the years, you don't make it in the music business, boys. You grow into it with people you knew. And Tom Long from Atlanta, Georgia, was the one that took us down to Georgia when we were working with Capricorn and all that. And he'd become a wig over at big wig over at the ASCAP agency. Oh. And who collect your airplay royalties, them and BMI, and of course now C-Stack.
We know those folks well.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so Tom, you bet. Yeah, I bet you do. Tom kept coaxing us, and a guy named Larry Shale worked for a guy named Harold Shedd, and they kept coaxing us to come down there and play, and they thought we could get a record deal in Nashville. And boys, I got to be honest with you. If somebody in the 70s would have told me that our band, Itchy Brother, could go to Nashville and get a record deal, I'd laughed them out of the room. And, the thing about it was, we've never been what you call a normal country band. We were a southern rock band, blues band, with rural sensibility lyrics. And that's what the country folks love about us. We play jazzed up rock music and blues music, but our lyrics are very rural. And now let's face it, down in the bottom line, the lyrics are where the heart is, and that's what you really go by.
Now, was Dumas Walker the first record that y'all put out as Kentucky Headhunters?
It was actually the first song. Let me finish where this went to, though. So anyway, we played, we finally agreed to come to Nashville and do a showcase, and it wound up about like we thought it was. We broke into the first song, which was Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine, and the place was full. And, man, we cleared that place out like it was a bomb threat. I mean, there was every record company in Nashville came to see us, but Harold Shedd, Larry Shell, and Tom Long, and the bartender and the sound guy and the waitresses was the only ones left. And they sat there and watched us play for 30 minutes, and Harold came up, and by the way, he just turned 90, and we just played a show in Hanksville, Kentucky, where they just made it Harold Shedd Day because he had some confidants that helped him get Alabama started and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But Harold saw us, and of course, he produced Alabama and a lot of other acts, and he had just taken over Mercury Records, and they needed something. They needed a shot in the arm, something special. And Harold had a knack for seeing things that could be different. He always tells me and still tells me, he said, I don't mind being the dog, but I want to be the lead dog. You know, I don't want to step in anything. So he taught me that. And Harold called me up after he saw us and heard a little tape we made of Picking on Nashville. He said, well, Richard, we might be cooking hamburgers next year, but I got to try this. And, of course, they printed up our thing on albums and CDs and what have you and cassettes. And the rest is history. It just changed our lives. You know, it came out and basically exploded worldwide. And, I mean, I got to tell you, going from playing bars and that sort of thing and being thrown into a situation where within 3 weeks we were opening for Hank Williams Jr.,
oh my goodness! We need to get another song squeezed in here. What do you think we ought to do? Walk Softly?
I would probably play Walk Softly since that was our first single.
All right.
Walk Softly came out first in 1989 October, and so it's probably a real good time to play that.
Let's do Walk Softly, and we'll come back and visit a little more with Richard Young of the Kentucky Headhunters. We'll be back right after this.
Walk softly on this hard mind. Don't treat it mean and so unkind. Let it rest in peace and quiet love. Walk softly.
programs, Lyrics and Legends, on the phone with us from, you have to tell me the name of that little burg in Kentucky there, Richard. Richard Young from the Kentucky Headhunters.
We're all from Edmonton, Kentucky. That's Edmonton, just like Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay.
So right now, I'm sitting down on a farm, family farm. I'm sitting here in front of Mom and Daddy's house on a 700-acre farm. Been there family forever, as I said. And the music house is just, the practice house is just inside of here, up the end of the driveway. And we're talking and having a good time on this, this Lyrics and Legend thing, man.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, Richard, we wouldn't expect anybody with the Kentucky Headhunters to be broadcasting from a Ritz-Carlton or anything. Right down there on the farm.
That's right. Right by the picking shack.
Well, no, it ain't the Ritz-Carlton, but it's a pretty nice shack, you know. But our daddy, y'all, when we was kids, he had a hobby, was tearing down Annabella Mansion. And we had no Dodge flatbed truck. And on the weekends, he and Mama would take us kids, and we would go tear up flooring and all kinds of stuff, to build a house. He wanted to build an Annabella Mansion. And all that stuff that we tore down all these years, one day he built him one. And, a lot of the stuff came from down on Broadway, from the old Baptist church. A lot of it came from a lot of down around Bellmead and all down in there, all the old mansions and stuff. But Dave was pretty sharp cat. He's taught school 39 years, was a historian, and a little bit of everything. He could talk on any subject in any language, but it's right here, Mom and Daddy's house. I'm sitting there looking at it. It's kind of like Andrew Jackson's house, if you imagine that. But
oh, yeah.
Daddy probably ain't got $40,000 in it, because all of us kids would have to tear up all this old floor, and, they'd have people come in, they was going to throw the columns away from these homes, and Daddy'd have them put on his truck, bring it home. I can't tell you how many times I've had my fingers mashed dealing with cut stone, real cut stone. We didn't have no backhoes or anything to unload it, so we'd get these 6x6s, and then we'd put the old window weights, old lead window weights.
Oh, yeah,
We'd put them under them rocks with crowbars, and we'd push them down there, and they're scattered all over his farm piles, But, of course, if you had to buy them right now, they'd be $500 a piece, but I guess they're worth more than this old farm, probably.
You remind me a lot of my engineer and his brother. They said Daddy told them if anybody ever offered to give you something, always take it, because next time it might be something good. So.
Well, I'll tell you, just when my grandmother passed away, my wife and I, my grandmother got all, she was a wheeler and a dealer, but she got all the electricity and the roads blacktopped through as far as the country. And but the oddest thing, she lived in a beautiful home, an old Victorian house that looked like a riverboat, but it never had running water or anything conveniences in it, just electricity. So Cindy and I moved out there after she passed away. Somebody had to be there, and we moved there, and we had an outside toilet and all, we was pioneers. And of course, when the headhunters hit, I was able to fix it up nice and all that. But, I tell you what, you got a woman that'll live like that with you today. You got something.
You got a good one, that's for sure.
Yeah, we've been married 41 years and went together 5 years.
Wow.
And, I still don't. When this COVID thing hit, I laughed and told her, I said, I knew you had three personalities, but since I've stayed home for a year and a half, I know you've got five now.
So the headhunters hit the big time. You put indoor plumbing in, and tell us where it goes from there. So you were.
Well, we've been very fortunate. As I said, my grandparents bought that store building. They'd been there since the Civil War, and they ran I actually live 2 miles from here, out on the crossroads of Wisdom at 68 and 640. And my grandparents bought that in 1921. And, back in them days, when you had a grocery store and you had milk and cheese and stuff, you had to keep a fire going. And
okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and they would move in two little side rooms and live there, and my grandfather would keep the fire going with coal in the big store because, you know, all your things that would deteriorate would freeze, you know, like your milk and eggs and that sort of thing. But they probably lived a pretty hard time, but they had a great business. And I always laughed and said my grandfather, John, I was young, and Cindy, my wife's grandfather, Fred Love, when they got out of World War One, they bought an oil rig, old rusty oil rig, and they hit one of the first oil strikes up in southern Illinois. And, of course, some big oil company come in immediately and bought them out. But they got enough money that my grandparents bought the old store at Wisdom. And Cindy, I get tickled every time I think, Cindy's grandfather, Fred Love, he started the Ford garage in it.
Oh, my.
And so we always laugh and tell everybody that we had a fixed marriage. You know? They didn't let money go anywhere, did they? But we've all lived a charmed life, boys, and you know, all of our family, and Doug's been with us 36 years now, and it's just a tight-knit group, and all of our roadies, two of our guys that work for the band have been with us 30 years, and it's everybody's known each other all their life, so it's not like some thrown together thing. I mean, it's it came from the ground up, you know, so the reason we've lasted so long, this is 53 years that Fred and Greg and I have played together, and I think I know the main reason we've stayed together so long is this farm and having that old music house and having a landing strip and a place to come home to and go in there and write music and have our powwows. And, you know, 90% of our videos back in the 90s were shot around here, you know, in the local area here.
Now, Richard, there has got to be a story behind Dumas Walker and how that came about.
Well, there is. Dumas Walker was a real man. Dumas lived about 35 minutes. We're about 35 or 40 minutes north of the Tennessee line in central Kentucky. And it's a little place called Moss, Tennessee. If you were in Tompkinsville, Kentucky, once you cross over Tennessee line, Dumas had a one-stop there. And people bought sandwiches and beer and you know, Coca-Colas or whatever, drinks, soft drinks. And he also sold fireworks. And Dumas was quite a character. He had a refrigerator in his building there that was not plugged up. And he hid like M80s and cherry bombs in there. I don't have to mind. A lot of people don't know what they are, but they're about equal to about a 16th of a stick of dynamite. And they'll blow your hand off. And Dumas would sell them in little brown boxes. And so when we'd go down there, our parents would take us to get fireworks. Of course, all we could get was firecrackers and, you know, the lightweight stuff. But as we got a driver's license, I know a lot of times what we'd do is we had people milking cows on the farm, and Daddy would send us up with the, we'd have to load all this corn on the truck and then a bunch of hay, and then we'd take it up to the southern states, and they would, they'd crush it and turn it into cow feed. And while they was crushing it, we'd burn it in Daddy's truck down to Dumas's and get us some refreshments, you see. And we probably, you know, and what we'd do is we'd hide it under our feet, and then when we got to the feed store, we'd throw it on the back of the truck and then cover it up with them sacks of corn, crushed corn and hay. And then we'd have to go and dump all that feed over in the feed bin, and we'd hide that beer or whatever we was drinking down in that, see? And that barn was one that's in the Walk Softly video. That's the one we used to put it in. And that's right across the road from the practice house. So it was very convenient. And then on the weekends, if we didn't have a sock hop or playing, you know, Yellow Hydrant or wherever we was going to play, then we'd get us a little ice chest and have a little refreshment while we was practicing and writing songs. But here's the trick about Namath. He was smart. He was, and y'all, this is true. He's pretty much the undisputed marble champion of the world. So when we was kids going down at Mom and Daddy, he'd get down and shoot marbles. Y'all, I've seen him put two marbles out about 20 feet from him, apart about 2 inches, and shoot a marble between it, and it hesitate and come back to him. But he won all the, well, it's called Mumley Peg, you know, the old.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, statement. But he was the champion of the world. I mean, he's kind of like the Minnesota Fats of marbles. But that's part of the story. And the other part is, we also used to play a place called Club 68 that was actually created before Interstate 65 was built. But there was a second place called the Greasy Spoon in Greensburg, Kentucky. And we used to play with the old Exile when they were a rock band, and different ones, a lot of R&B and blues acts there, because they didn't have I-65 then, so everybody traveled on 68. So it was a very famous place, and actually Ike and Tina Turner got signed there to a record deal.
Wow.
And so on our way home, we stopped at the Greasy Spoon in Greensburg, and Mr. Adolphusinus ran it, and he would, we'd go in there, several of us, 7 or 8 of us, and he'd start taking our orders, and he made slaw burgers and chili, a key thing, slaw burgers, and he made chili, and they had the ski there, a soft drink, which is similar to the mix of a Mella Yella and a citrus drink.
Right, yeah.
And a soda, and we'd go in there, and Mr. Ennis would, he'd take our orders, and I'd say, Mr. Ennis, don't you need a pad to write this down? And he said, no, son, I got a photogenic mind. Well, he meant a photographic mind.
Photogenic.
So I never forgot that line that he said, you know, and of course the law in the town line came from that. But, you know, it's just little things like that in life that are real that come through in songs. But in the end, we called the song Let's All Go Down to Dumas Walker's because it was hard to sing Let's All Go Up to Adolphusinus. It just didn't have the same ring, you know?
That's great.
But the song is a culmination of those two places from our youth. You know, like Whitey Schaefer told me earlier in the interview, I told you, I said, he said, get back up there to that practice shack y'all got. And write what you know. And
yeah.
That's what we do.
Hey, we're going to take a little turn here. And you guys have a new album out. We want to get a little material off it and let you talk about it a little bit. You got one that's streaming pretty good, don't you, Richard, off your new album?
Yes, we do. There was a song on there called How Could I? And it was actually, it was a song I wrote with my son's band, Blackstone Cherry. And it was written for their second album. Of course, they've, as I said, we talked about them selling out Royal Albert Hall last week in England and all this. They're huge now. But I had helped them get started and produced their first album and got them a record deal in New York. And we sent them to Europe, and they blew up and exploded over there. They're doing well in America, but we don't have the Southern rock roots thing that we have over in other countries, unfortunately. But, you know, they write everything. One of their albums, it's a country song. It was a rock song, but there's a country band recorded a few years ago called the Florida Georgia Line.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They recorded,
I've heard of those folks.
Yeah, I think that's the way you say it. But anyway, they had a song called Stay on Blackstone Cherry's album that they'd written. And the Florida Georgia Line boys, I always get them mixed up with the Florida boys, the gospel group. But anyway, the Florida Georgia Line re-recorded Blackstone Cherry's song Stay, and it became a number one hit for them on country radio.
Oh, so yeah.
You just never know where something's going to lie and land, you know?
But, yeah, your new album you've got out, I listened to it for about 2 hours
today. Yeah, well, I'll tell you about that, boys.
Some good stuff.
Is all last, it's very eclectic. I know it's different. We, last year, you know, we didn't get to play but 8 shows last year. We had close to 80 shows to play, and most of them moved this year, which they about had us running with our tongue hanging out because we had other new shows come in. But, and most of those shows, to be honest with you, were drive-in shows where people would drive in their car,
right,
and pay a set price, and it was like the old drive-ins. They didn't care how many people. You could bring a trunk full or a pickup truck full, but it was $30 to get in.
They're doing some of that over here, yeah.
Yeah, and they spaced them out. So thank God for that we got to play some shows. But, you know, this past year, come February and March, we were supposed to start back touring, and we had things were looking up, and we had 8 or 10 shows booked. And all of a sudden, all these people called and said, hey, we can't do it because of COVID. We want to move to later in the year. And so we of course, we were fine with that, but that kind of left us where we were sitting there for over a year as a band that played all the time. And I just told the boys, I said, boys, we got to do something to be a band. So we decided that we'd go in the studio the end of February, 1st of March, and just do us a new album. And prior to that, we were going to go in the old music house and get our ducks in a row, you know, say, what you got? You know, what you got on your mind song-wise and all this? And Greg got the COVID on our last show, and he couldn't even go out. And then the lead singer and the guitar player from Blackstone Cherry went out, and it was November the 3rd, the 21st, I guess. He went and filled in for Greg, and we had a great time, and that was the last date we played because beer season came in. I ain't going to play during beer season. That's just a settled down fact, boys. It ain't going to happen. So I don't care if we're starving today.
We got to get one in here. So what are we going to listen to, Buck?
What's the name of the new album?
I think we probably should play How Could I. That's the one that I wrote with Blackstone Cherry.
Yeah, listen
to let's see how it goes around. It's doing awfully well out there right now.
All right, we're going to listen to How Could I, and we'll be back. We're going to have to wrap this up pretty quick, Buck. We'll be back with more Lyrics and Legends right after this.
When we weren't thinking, 'cause I was wrong, I told you to leave, and now you're gone, I'm all alone. How could I be so damn blind to the fact that you really cared for me? to be your boyfriend. You will always be my girlfriend. I lost my head and you walked away. Funny how good things always great.
Lyrics and Legends, man, we've had a fun. We got a storyteller on the phone, and we have been having a good time. And with us on the phone, in the studio, Buck Weatherby, with us on the phone, Richard Young of the Kentucky Headhunters.
Oh, man.
Just listen to a song called How Could I?
That's from the new album now. Yeah. And what's the name of the album,
the new,
Richard?
The new album's called That's a Fact, Jack.
That's a Fact, Jack.
And good title.
I got to tell you, boys, hey, listen. We came out of this COVID mess and all this and everything else that went on last year. You know what? We won't get into that. And it just, you know, we went in the studio blind. But it's great to know that we had enough sense to put together 12 songs or 13. That, you know, that, and it's very eclectic. We made sure that we had fun. We didn't, we wasn't even thinking about what making a difference whether it was put out or not. We just wanted everybody to have a good time in the band. And, heck, Fred, my brother, singing two songs, and Greg, guitar player, singing one. And then Doug and I splitting the rest of them up.
I'll tell you a couple but of them off there I really liked. One was Heart and Soul. I love that song.
Yeah, that's a good song.
And
I'll tell you what, if we just got a little time, since, you know, the holidays are just around the corner, I know it ain't, it's not Halloween yet. I don't want to come across like a store putting up Christmas stuff before Halloween, but I think it'd be kind of nice if we end this, if we got to get off here with our Christmas song.
I think that's perfect. Buck said we can't get off this phone without playing that Christmas song. Tell us about it.
No, and maybe that's a good way to go away, but, you know, I'll just say this, that doing all this V-Monster stuff that we've all had to deal with and their families and a lot of loss of members of families and this sort of thing. Is last Thanksgiving, my wife Cindy and I were sitting at home, and we always have big Christmas Thanksgivings and dinners you know, the whole thing, and it's like everybody gets together some way or another. But you know that there's always one or two you don't see for a year, and they show up and they start a spree. You know, they've got to bring up something they could have just left at the house.
And,
so
or something.
I was sitting at home, and Cindy put some deer tenderloin and some red potatoes and carrots and onions and things in the crock pot that morning. And we just stayed by ourselves and had some cornbread, some hoe cakes. Boy, it was good. But we were alone, and I thought, you know, even though we always have a spree when we get together from one or two, it's because, you know, boys, I ain't kidding you. I mean, you can have three women make cakes, and if somebody doesn't eat one of them's cake, there'll be a spree about that. So I always go in the kitchen, and if everybody got a piece of cake and they didn't get some of one of them, I'll cut about a third of it out and throw it in the waste can covered up with paper towel just to keep the heat down. And, so I was sitting there thinking, you know, while we was waiting for that deer meat to get done, and I said, you know, even though we get together and there's always one or two want to stir up something, isn't it a shame we can't get together and fight?
So the name of this song is?
Let's All Get Together and Fight.
It's a Christmas song.
We're going to listen to this, and we'll be back to wrap this up right after this.
Well, it's holiday time in the South,
and we're headed to Grandma's house with plenty of bottles of homemade wine and cases of ice cold stout. All of my cousins, brothers and sisters, and all the mothers I know will all jump in and lend a hand when the party turns to blows. So let's all get together and fight, 'cause you know it wouldn't be Christmas without black eyes. There's too many cooks in the kitchen, and too many kin folks bitching. So let's all get together and fight. Yeah, we're sitting around the Christmas tree, getting stoned and raising hell, eating wild turkey, deer on the grill, and oysters on the hash shell. When the atmosphere starts heating up, it might be a good time to run. It's a family tradition with our wild bunch when Grandma throws the first punch. So let's all get together and fight, 'cause you know it wouldn't be Christmas without black eyes. There's too many cooks in the kitchen, and too many kin folks bitching. So let's all get together and fight. Give me a stick. Together and fight, 'cause you know it wouldn't be Christmas without black eyes. There's too many cooks in the kitchen, and too many kin folks bitching. So let's all get together and fight. Oh, yes, the sun shines bright in our old Kentucky home, where we all get together and fight.
Lyrics and Legends, man, we've had a good time, Buck. This has been a fun one.
I'm still laughing at the Christmas song.
Couldn't hardly get a word out of Richard. Young on the phone with us, Kentucky Headhunters.
We're probably going to have to do a revisitation later down the road.
Oh, yeah. Man, we'd love
Part
it.
Two.
We would love it.
And you guys have been great, and thank you for supporting the Kentucky Headhunters and everybody as far as that concerns.
And we've got one more segment, Richard, called the Department of Shameless Plugs. And you can talk about...
The Department of what?
It's called the Department of Shameless Plugs. So you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Plug
your album, plug how pretty your wife is, plug how smart your son is, or how good your dog is.
I got you. You just tell me when to roll. How long have I got?
You got 90 seconds. Let her rip right now.
Well, all right, folks. We got to say good night. It's been a ball with these guys. It's Richard Young of the Kentucky Headhunters. And I got to say, y'all are lucky to have these people around. I've had such a good time. I would like to remind you, we've got a new album coming out October the 22nd. And it's called That's a Fact, Jack. And we'd love for y'all to visit and check it out. Also, I want you to check out my son's band, Blackstone Cherry. I'm a bagging you, and they're huge. We talked about it already. They're great big in Europe. And they love Texas. Texas loves them. Also, I've got a new band that I'm producing. It's blowing up, called the Georgia Thunderbolts. I know some of you folks listening in have already heard them and dig it. And I just, I want to say a big, big, huge thanks to Buck and Gary and our engineer, Jim, for having sweaty elbows to get this thing pulled off. God bless you. And we're going to be down to Texas soon. I think we're playing two or three dates in November down there. Y'all check out our schedule. Get on our Facebook, say hi. And just don't tell everybody I acted silly on this, all right?
All right.
Y'all.
Hey.
God bless you.
Thank you, Richard.
This has been another edition of Lyrics and Legends with Gary Ware. Join us next time on the Legends Radio Network.